All right, so welcome to another deep dive, everybody. Today we're taking a look at, invasive species.
Ooh.
Yeah, should be a good one. And we're focusing specifically on this research article all about Lupinus polyphyllus.
Lupinus polyphyllus.
You might know it as the large-leaved lupine.
Okay.
It's a beautiful plant, but, you know, it's become a bit of a problem child over in Europe.
I see, yeah.
So what's really cool about this study is they actually tracked it across a huge area, like over 2,000 kilometers,
wow,
to see how, you know, its growth and just its whole life cycle changes with latitude.
Interesting, yeah.
And some of the findings are pretty surprising.
Well, you know, it makes sense that this research is so important because this goes way beyond just looking at one plant, right?
Yeah.
Invasive species can really have like a huge impact on whole ecosystems.
Yeah.
I mean, they can push out all the native plants. They can even like change the soil composition, which then impacts insects. You know, it's this whole domino effect.
Right.
And understanding all of that is super important for conservation, especially with climate change being a factor now too.
Totally. Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. Like, what is Lupinus polyphyllus?
Right.
What makes it such a botanical troublemaker?
Yeah. So it's native to North America, actually.
Oh, really?
But it's become, yeah, invasive in Europe. It's like, you know, that friend who comes to visit and then just decides to, like, redecorate your whole house.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. And the study, it actually goes into detail about why it's so invasive. Like, it just outcompetes native plants for resources.
Yeah.
It changes the soil, you know, adds nitrogen to it.
Oh, okay.
And it even affects insect population. So it's really like, you know, reshaping the whole environment to suit its needs.
Wow. It's incredible how just one plant can do so much.
Yeah.
There's one thing in the study that really surprised me, though. They found that latitude doesn't always, you know, predict plant size. Well, like, for example, the shortest plants they found were actually in Hamburg, Germany. But the tallest ones were way further north in towards Snow, Poland.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know. I always just kind of assumed that colder temperatures meant smaller plants, but...
Yeah, it seems logical, right?
Yeah. What's going on there?
Well, you know, it's easy to think that, but nature is rarely that simple.
Right.
So colder temperatures can limit growth, yeah, but other things can too, like the soil quality, how much competition there is from other plants, even just how much sunlight an area gets, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
This study is a good reminder that science isn't always about, you know, just confirming what we think we know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's about challenging those assumptions.
Yeah, that's a great point. And speaking of challenging assumptions, this is where things get really interesting.
Okay.
The study really dives into this concept called phenology.
Phenology, yeah.
Which is basically the timing of, like, seasonal events in a plant's life. You know, when it buds, when it flowers, when it produces seeds, all that.
Right.
And they found that Lupinus polyphyllus, it flowers and makes seeds later the further north you go.
Okay, which makes sense.
Right. Colder temperatures, slower life cycle.
Right.
But here's the kicker. Okay.
Okay.
The energy it needs for all of these events stays pretty much the same.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So how is that even possible?
Well, that's what's so cool about this. It seems like Lupinus polyphyllus, it's adapted to the environment in kind of a surprising way.
Yeah.
The study found that those long summer days up north, you know, they actually offset the colder temperatures.
Oh.
So even though everything is happening slower, the plant still gets that same amount of energy it needs, just over a longer period.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty neat, huh?
Yeah, that is really cool. And they even came up with this clever way to measure this called growing degree hours.
Oh, yeah.
Which basically combines, like, temperature data with the length of daylight.
Yep.
To figure out how much energy a plant is actually getting. That's pretty ingenious.
It really is.
Yeah.
And this finding, it actually has some really important implications for managing Lupinus polyphyllus.
Oh, okay.
Because the study found that mowing, which is a common way to control it.
Right.
It needs to be timed super carefully.
Yeah.
If you want to prevent those seeds from spreading.
So knowing exactly when that plant is going to flower and release all those seeds is like...
Yeah, well, it's key.
Crucial.
Otherwise, you know, all that mowing you're doing might actually be helping it spread further.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this is where the research gets really practical.
Okay.
They suggest that mowing dates should actually shift by about a week for every 500 kilometers north you go.
Mm.
So it's, you know, that's actionable information.
Yeah.
That can directly inform conservation efforts.
This is why I love these deep dives.
Yeah.
We're not just learning, you know, interesting facts, yeah, but we're uncovering knowledge that can actually be used to make a real difference in the world. So to recap quickly, We've learned that invasive species are complex. Understanding their phenology, those seasonal cycles, is super important for managing how they spread, especially with climate change, adding another layer of complexity to everything. But there's a lot more to uncover here.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? We haven't even really talked about how Lupinus polyphyllus actually impacts the area once it kind of takes hold.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was thinking about that too. It's not just individual plants losing out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it changes the whole ecosystem.
Right.
So the research, it actually cites some examples where Lupinus polyphyllus, like, it becomes so dominant that it almost completely takes over.
Really?
And crowds out a ton of native plants.
Oh, wow.
And when you lose all that diversity, well, that makes the ecosystem way more vulnerable to anything that could disrupt it.
Right. Yeah. It's like putting all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
If that one species struggles, the whole system's going to suffer.
Yeah. And it's not even just the number of species either. It's also like what we call functional diversity. So like different plants, you know, they have different roles in the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Like some are great at attracting pollinators.
Yeah.
Some help prevent soil erosion.
Right.
Things like that.
Makes sense.
When Lupinus polyphyllus takes over, it disrupts all those essential functions.
Oh, wow.
And then that leads to this cascade of effects like throughout the whole food web.
Wow. So it's like really changing the rules of the game.
Yeah.
But how does it even get so successful in the first place?
Right.
How is it able to just outcompete all the native plants like that?
Well, Lupinus polyphyllus has a couple tricks up its sleeve.
Okay.
So first of all, it's the legume.
Okay.
Which means that it has this special relationship with bacteria that can pull nitrogen right out of the air.
Oh, cool.
And add it to the soil.
Wow.
So this gives it like a huge advantage in areas where the soil isn't super nutrient rich.
Right.
It's like it brings its own fertilizer.
That's a pretty smart strategy.
It is. And then on top of that, it makes a ton of seeds. And those seeds, they can stay viable in the soil for years.
Really?
Yeah. So even if you manage to like get rid of it in one spot,
right,
it's got this hidden reserve just waiting for the right time to sprout.
Oh, wow.
It's playing the long game.
So it's tough, resourceful, and patient. No wonder it's so hard to control.
Exactly. And we can't forget about how adaptable it is.
Right.
This plant can thrive in a bunch of different habitats, from open fields to forests.
Wow.
So it can spread super easily and colonize all these new areas.
It sounds like a botanical supervillain.
Right.
So given all that we've talked about, you know, the adaptability, the nitrogen fixation, the seeds, are there any positives when it comes to managing it?
Well, the study really emphasizes how important that carefully timed mowing is.
Right.
Especially with those shifts in phenology we talked about earlier.
Right, yeah.
If you can time it right before the plant starts making seeds, you have a way better chance of stopping it from spreading.
So it sounds like it's a really delicate balancing act.
It is.
You have to understand the plant's life cycle and the local environment.
Yeah.
And even like factor in latitude.
Exactly. And it really shows how important it is to have this holistic approach to managing invasive species.
Yeah.
We can't just focus on eradicating them completely.
Right.
We got to think about the whole ecosystem and try to restore the balance.
That makes sense.
And that takes ongoing research and monitoring and collaboration between scientists and policymakers and even just the local communities.
It really highlights how interconnected everything is.
Yeah.
Our actions can have these ripple effects throughout the environment.
For sure.
Speaking of connections, this paper mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, a possible link between plant phenology and genetics.
Yeah, that's an area that's still being explored, but it's definitely fascinating.
Yeah.
The study mentioned some research on other Lupinus species that showed like a ton of genetic variation, even within small geographic areas.
So it's not just about the species as a whole, right? There could be these tiny genetic differences between populations that affect their phenology.
Exactly. They actually talked about a study on Lupinus lepidus, which showed different flowering times between populations that established themselves before and after a volcanic eruption.
Oh, wow.
It's a really cool example of how plants can adapt to big changes in the environment.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really shows the power of natural selection.
Yeah.
Those plants with the traits that help them survive and reproduce after the eruption pass those traits on to their offspring.
Exactly.
And that led to these totally distinct populations.
Yeah, and they also mentioned Lupinus arboreus.
Okay.
Which is a woody shrub.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows genetic variation in things like plant size and flowering time. between populations that are basically right next to each other.
Wow, less than 500 meters apart.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What could even cause that kind of variation over such a short distance?
It really shows how even small differences in the environment can lead to big evolutionary changes.
Yeah.
And it emphasizes how important genetic diversity is for a species' resilience, especially with our climate changing so rapidly.
Right, because the more diverse the population is genetically, the more likely it is that some individuals will have the traits that help them adapt
exactly.
to those new challenges.
And this brings us back to Lupinus polyphyllis.
Okay.
Understanding the genetic diversity within this species could be super important for developing better management strategies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We might find that certain genetic types are more aggressive.
Right.
Or more adaptable.
That's a good point. It's like personalized medicine, but for plants.
Yeah.
It seems like the key is to understand what makes each population unique.
And that's why research like this is so valuable.
Yeah.
It's giving us a deeper understanding of these invasive species and their impacts and how we can manage them better.
It's incredible how much we can learn from just one study.
Yeah.
And then how we can apply that knowledge to protect biodiversity.
Absolutely.
I'm already thinking about all the other invasive species out there.
Yeah. And I wonder if these same principles apply.
Yeah. It really makes you think, huh? Like, what other connections are we missing, you know?
Right.
We started off talking about how Lupinus polyphyllis, like, affects ecosystems.
Yeah.
Then we got into how complex its life cycle is.
Right.
And now we're talking about genetics.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It seems like every answer just brings up more questions.
Well, that's the fun part of science, right? It's all about, like, peeling back those layers and finding these new connections.
Yeah, that's true.
And this research, it really highlights how important it is to, like, look at the big picture.
Yeah.
When you're trying to manage these invasive species.
It's not just about getting rid of them, right?
Exactly.
That's about really understanding them.
Yeah.
Like their biology and how they fit into the ecosystem.
Their ecology, their genetics even.
And then use all that to come up with, you know, strategies to manage them.
That actually work.
Right. And that are sustainable too.
Yeah, totally. And it requires like a shift in how we think about things.
Mm.
Instead of just seeing invasive species as these invaders that we have to get rid of,
yeah,
we can start to think of them as like pieces of a puzzle.
Okay.
You know, each piece, even the ones that seem like they don't fit,
right,
they still have a role to play in that bigger ecosystem.
That's a really cool way to think about it. So for someone like me, you know, who's not a scientist or a policymaker, what can I do to help protect biodiversity?
Which is knowing about these issues is a huge first step.
Okay.
You know, knowledge is power.
Right.
You can start by learning about the invasive species that are in your area.
Yeah.
How they spread and what you can do to prevent that from happening.
That makes sense. We talk a lot about things like recycling and reducing our carbon footprint.
Yeah.
But being mindful of invasive species is something I haven't really thought about before.
It's easy to focus on those big global problems.
Right.
And forget about the smaller, more local things we can do.
And those smaller actions can still have a big impact, though.
Exactly. Like, you can choose to plant native species in your garden.
Okay.
You can make sure to clean your hiking boots.
Yeah.
So you're not spreading seeds around.
Right.
You can even volunteer to help remove invasive species in your community.
You know, now that you mention it, I remember seeing a group of volunteers cleaning up a park near my house.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea that they were removing invasive species.
Let's see.
I'm definitely going to look into how I can get involved with that.
That's great. And honestly, even just paying attention when you're out in nature can be helpful.
Really?
Yeah, you're contributing to science just by observing.
Oh, wow.
Like, look at the plants. You see, notice how they're growing. And if you see something unusual, report.
Okay.
Citizen science is becoming so important for tracking invasive species these days.
That's really cool. It makes me feel like I can actually do something. You know,
great.
Sometimes it feels like these environmental problems are just too big.
Right.
But even just paying attention and taking small steps can make a difference.
Absolutely. And remember, this is just one study about one species.
Right.
There's so much more out there waiting to be discovered.
That's true.
Who knows what other connections and adaptations we'll find?
This deep dive has definitely made me way more curious about all of this.
That's great to hear.
I'm going to go out and look at plants in my neighborhood with a whole new perspective.
Awesome.
Maybe I'll even be able to spot some of those little genetic variations we were talking about.
You never know. Your observations could even lead to some big discovery.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
We've only scratched the surface here.
That's true.
But it's been a really awesome journey.
It has.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the world around us.